This episode of Behind the Video is brought to you by the Independent Media Network. The Independent Media Network helps journalists and content creators create their own jobs by building sustainable online businesses. If you're an unemployed or underemployed journalist or content creator, visit immtt.com for more information. Hey everybody, we are back. This is Behind the Video, episode number 40. That is 40. And joining me as always is my lovely co-host Tim from Los Angeles, California. How are you?
Doing well. Who could roll out of bed and look this good other than me?
Certainly not me. I've been up for a couple hours now and have a few cups of coffee going. So
that's what I like about this show. I just roll out of bed, turn on the computer, and grab a cup of coffee and just BS my way into podcasting history.
That's it. It's how it works. And and you can actually download a whole history of our shows, all 40 of them, on our our Stitcher and our iTunes pages. And of course, if you're using some other podcatcher, somehow it magically shows up there too. So Downcast and all that great stuff that's out there for mobile phones. So you can download and listen to us. And we do BS our way through a lot of this, but
Or they can join us live.
They can, because we are interactive. That is correct. At behindthevideo.com/live, we've got a way for you to call in. So we'll take your calls and just be sure to brush your hair, because a call on Behind the Video is, of course, in video on our Google Hangout page.
Time is 8:30 a.m. Pacific on Sunday mornings.
That's right.
11:30 a.m. Eastern.
Exactly.
So if you're stuck in your house because there's snow outside, might be, you know, join us.
Join us. Even if the weather's great, join us, because we usually try not to talk for too much and let you enjoy the rest of your day. But we also have a great producer, Jason Perrier, who gives us all the BS that we talk about. So he's been doing quite a great job for us. And we do have some breaking video news to talk about. The first involves NASCAR. Did you see this crash yesterday, Tim?
Yeah, pretty unbelievable. I mean, I'm not a NASCAR fan, but I did grow up near Daytona Beach. And so the Daytona 500 always catches my attention. And unfortunately, yesterday's it caught a lot of people's attention, and some of the people in the stands caught some of the parts from a car crash with their body. And so I think about 12 people were injured, but somebody in the stands had their camera going and they caught it. And when they caught that video of the crash happening, they posted it on YouTube rather quickly.
Where else would you put it?
And guess what happened, Lon?
Did they enforce a content ID claim against that video?
Apparently NASCAR did, and YouTube took it down for a little while, but then it went back up.
And this is according to The Verge. So NASCAR took it down, saying that they did it out of respect for those injured in the accident, although it was done on what YouTube said was copyright claims. And YouTube reversed that takedown a little bit later and said that there was no copyright infringed in the video. And YouTube's statement was to the Washington Post, "Our partners and users do not have the right to take down videos from YouTube unless they contain content which is copyright infringing." And then that is why they reinstated the video. But nevertheless, it's almost, you know, you're almost guilty before being proven innocent. So, you know, in the case of a news event where this was a huge event that happened at a very particular point in time, a breaking news event, and the video was taken down just long enough so that it missed the news cycle. And, yeah, you know, and this person that uploaded it probably wasn't a independent business content creator person, but they nonetheless, you know, had their speech, at least on YouTube, infringed. That video did make it out to other platforms, but unfortunately, when you're off of YouTube and off of that revenue sharing space, you lose the ability to earn some money on it, even if it is of a tragedy. I like to think of these things as news events, and I think there's some, you know, if ABC and the other folks can profit from it, why can't an independent provider make some money
because
reporting on the news?
Because you're independent, you're not allowed to.
That's right.
I'm sorry. you know what? I wonder what's going to happen here. What crosses my mind is at what point, because we're such a litigious society, at what point is somebody going to sue a NASCAR for taking down? Like, they're not going to sue YouTube, but they're going to sue a NASCAR who blocked their video and cost them money. Now, they may not do it in this particular case, but I imagine pretty soon that's going to happen where somebody's going to go, hey, dude, you blocked my video. You cost me revenue because I had the breaking story, and I missed the news cycle because of you. So, see you in court.
I think that time might come soon. And Tim, you know, related to this, what tips do you have for someone? Let's say, you know, because we've seen this happen now over and over again. I'm thinking of two dashboard camera videos that we talked about last week. One was the plane crash in Russia. The second was the meteor that crashed into Russia. You have this video. All of a sudden, before you know it, it is all over every network television without any direction to the source of that video. So how do you protect yourself in this situation? So let's say I do have a video that covers, you know, the only video of a breaking news event that nobody else has. The producer from ABC calls me up and says they want to use my video on the air. Do I say yes or no? What do I tell them?
Well, it depends on what your goals are, what you're trying to do. I mean, you've always got to think about that. You look at the Zapruder film. I think the Zapruder film, which shows the assassination of John F. Kennedy, it was shot on 8mm or Super 8, I can't remember which one, but it was bought by Time Incorporated, and I think at that time they paid $100,000 for it, and they owned it outright. Is your goal to just get it out there and get a name for yourself, or are you, you know, building a collection, a library of content that you're going to be licensing into the future? If you look at the Twin Towers, when they fell, there was some footage that was amateur footage that showed up right away and was basically given away, and there was no money for it. And then years later, other footage popped up, and it was of more value because that angle had never been seen before. If your goal is to make money with it, it's hard to say, isn't it? Yeah, it's hard to say because you could give it out there and only license it, but you're going to lose a lot of it because it will be ripped off. It will be shown in other places. One way that you could really take advantage of it if you wanted to get it everywhere is to only put out a version that has a copyright burned on it and has your website on there. So you're going to get a lot of traffic to that website. Now, people will cover that up, but then that opens the door for you suing them because they've taken your footage and they've hid your copyright. So there's legal action that you can take. Of course, some of the people that are going to do that have no money, so suing them will do you no good except waste your legal fees.
Right. I mean, I look at what happened to me with my stupid little Mars video where, you know, my video wasn't taken down, but Fox News for 30 days just put a lock on it so I couldn't make any money with it, and it was quite annoying. And I certainly wasn't going to go sue over it because I didn't have damages that significant, but I could see in the case of the meteor or some other event that occurred, even this NASCAR thing, that, you know, there's potentially thousands of dollars that can be wasted here, or lost.
If not hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
You know, depending. Because, you know, a lot of these stringers that are out there, they make money and they get paid to go get the shot, to go get that video, and then they license it to TMZ. I remember when I was working at Walt Disney World, there was a photographer that came to the park, and he knew that Princess Diana and the family were going to be visiting Walt Disney World, so he hung out at Splash Mountain all day, figuring at some point she's going to come through Splash Mountain because at that time that was the big new ride. And sure enough, she came through. He got the shot of her and probably made like $100,000 for that one shot of Princess Diana going down Splash Mountain. So you got to know where you're going to sell it. Yeah, right. He sold it exclusively.
So you could sell the footage exclusively if you wanted to and not forego the YouTube thing completely. Do you think you could make more money doing that versus a YouTube?
If you don't know where to sell it and you don't know who to sell it to, it's worthless. You know,
right.
It's only worth what somebody's willing to pay for it. And once you put it out there, you're never going to get it back.
Right.
So you got to make that decision at the time. Do you want to make a name for yourself or get your video out there? Is it newsworthy, important, or do you not care about making money? You just want to share it with everybody. Is that your goal?
Hmm.
Go for it.
Some food for thought. So just keep that in mind, though. If you do have a video that goes viral, especially if a news event, you know, if you put it up on YouTube right away, think about how you're going to protect that content. And perhaps the best way, as Tim said earlier, is to burn your website into the footage, at least, so you can identify it.
Unless it gets hacked off of wherever you're right. storing it. Now, that's exactly. a whole other case.
And if you're a fan of Burger King, you may have been confused when they started advertising McDonald's on there. By the way, we have some folks watching, and you can dial us in live with your thoughts, too, behindthevideo.com/live. So feel free to visit that page, and there's a link to dial into the show. So, Tim, you know, I'm a occasional fast food eater. As we've both stopped eating bad things, but I have a few vices occasionally that I might entice at the drive-thru window there. So, what happened at Burger King this week? And
so,
Jeep.
Burger King and Jeep, their Twitter accounts got hacked, and apparently a bunch of other people. And I kind of question as to who really got hacked and who didn't. I mean, we had a lot of corporate companies this week that announced that, as well as U.S. Government institutions, and announced that they had been hacked by the Chinese military.
Right, which wasn't, by the way, a Twitter account takeover like this Burger King thing was, right?
Yeah. So Burger King got their Twitter account taken over, and so did Jeep. I saw some stuff about Justin Bieber, Donald Trump. I don't know who really got hacked. The funny thing was, is Jeep's Twitter account, 15 minutes before they got hacked, posted something about how not to get hacked.
So, and then they get hacked.
Yeah. So don't do that. Stop talking about it. We're done. This isn't even the topic of our show. Ixnay on the act day.
Yeah, right. We don't hack. So I guess it could help. And I guess these followers on these accounts went up quite a bit, right?
Yeah, I think Burger King picked up, 30,000 extra followers just because people were talking about it. I don't know why you would follow Burger King, but there's probably some reason for it. I can't imagine. You know, I mean, if you're following, say, a TV show and you want to know who's winning, say, American Idol, which, by the way, came in number 5 this last week, courtesy of TV by the Numbers at zaptoit.com, I think they came in at like 3.6.
Like I said, there's two ratings. So amongst the 18, so I get there's like an 18 to 49, and then there's another rating there. But anywhere between 3 and 4 million viewers, and a lot of folks have been talking about how American Idol has just lost a lot of its luster. Although they're still doing okay, right? But they're not where they were. But this show's been on the air for 13 years, right?
Yeah, a lot has changed. I mean, they have a different cast of judges, mm-hmm. and the whole ecosystem in which they live has changed. Television is changing. Radio transitioned to television, and although radio hasn't gone away, your favorite radio drama or your grandparents' favorite radio drama doesn't exist anymore except in the archives.
And, right.
You know, American Idol to me feels like a show that could totally play on the internet because it's interactive and people vote and people comment. So I could see a revamp of that show happening to really take advantage of what's going on with all this new technology. But you look at a show like 2.5 Men that came in at number 4 with about 4 million viewers as well. And that's a show that is a sitcom format that was invented by Desi Arnaz for I Love Lucy. That's a format that's been around with us for a long time. But, you know, will it be around as we evolve into this interactive show format moving forward? I don't know. Modern Family seems to be doing really popular with about 4 million as well. Great, fun show. American Idol came in at number 2. For their Wednesday show at about 5 million. And then a sitcom, Big Bang Theory on CBS, with almost 7 million viewers.
And it's funny, the Big Bang Theory, whose characters really are living in modern technology, more so probably than the people watching it, is the one that's doing quite well. And you raise some good points on American Idol, too, because American Idol, is, as we said, started 13 years ago in the year 2000, before Facebook, before YouTube, before all of this stuff, and the format is largely the same. So Maybe they do have to do a little more audience interaction, especially given that the audience towards the end of the show, the main part of the show, which is those that weekly elimination that goes on, is driven by viewers who are still dialing phone numbers to vote. Right? I mean, there's probably some social media voting going on, but it's not what you think it would be for a show that is so largely interactive in determining its outcome. So. That is an interesting look at it. So
it's no Pawn Stars.
It is no Pawn Stars, and that's the top. That's number five on our cable charts this week. People just love looking at junk.
or seeing if people are going to buy their junk.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Because they might have junk like that. That one seems to be one of those shows that's evergreen. You don't need to tune in to see who wins on that. I think it's a little different than, say, a Disney Channel show like Austin and Ally, which I know absolutely nothing about.
I know nothing about that either.
Come in at number four.
Well, I'll tell you what. In a few months, Tim, I'm going to have a daughter arriving, and hopefully she won't watch TV that soon. But at some point, I'm going to know all about this stuff. But until then, we'll just keep going.
I was in the desert this weekend, and I saw a band at there's like this roadhouse bar in the middle of the desert. Called Pappy and Harriet's, and a lot of bands play there. And I went there, and there was this band of two girls playing in this. I mean, basically, it's like a redneck bar in the middle of the desert. But there's these two little girls that look like they are destined to be on the Disney Channel. They have a band called Pretty Little Demons, and one of them sings, plays guitar, plays keyboard. The other one sings and plays drums. The drummer's 10, the singer's 12, and they're going to be the youngest band at Austin's South by Southwest coming up. So maybe it'll be in time for your daughter to watch them on Disney Channel. Although she could be into the NBA All-Stars as well.
She could be. She might be into that. Yeah. So the Saturday. Now I guess there was the game was on Sunday. So the pregame stuff Saturday had 5.8 million viewers on TNT. That must be when they do all the dunk competitions and all that stuff.
All right? That fun, yeah. All the spectacle.
Yeah, all the spectacle. And I'll tell you what, that stuff got a lot less interesting after Michael Jordan left the game, but what are you going to do? 2013, the All-Star Game, the big one, on Sunday night got 8 million viewers on TNT. So the NBA is still drawing some viewership there, but nothing compares to The Walking Dead, which once again dominated ratings. In fact, did better than the top network show this week. 11 million viewers last week for The Walking Dead, which is an excellent show, which I always
People
say
love
every
it.
Week.
Zombies.
The more the merrier. So just a brief note on CBS and Intel. So as you know, there's been a lot of controversy over CBS nixing any discussion of a certain DVR from Dish Network showing up on their network, so they cannot advertise on CBS networks. They cannot. In fact, they even put the kibosh down on some journalists at CNET from even talking about it. So now it looks like CBS and Intel are talking about doing something together, and they perhaps might create their own set-top box. So more fragmentation, Tim? Is this good or bad for us independent creators, or does it not matter?
Well, I think Intel getting into the marketplace and offering a over-the-top solution is good for all of us. I think it's going to really open up the doors and create some competition for Roku, and or who knows, Intel could even have a channel on Roku. But I think it's good. So I look forward to seeing all the good stuff that Intel's going to have coming out and all the different partners that they'll have involved as well. There is an article about it on Wired.com in the Gadget Lab section that you can check out, and that'll be in our show notes as well.
All right, and hopefully there's some warm bodies on that one, because that's number five in our box office list this week, $8.87 million. That is the love story between the woman who's not dead and the guy who is. Escape from Planet Earth, which is an animation, one of those computer animated deals, is number four at $15.9 million. Safe Haven, 21.4. That's that movie, one of those romantic whatevers I never watch. Identity Thief is number two, a comedy at 23.7 million. And leading the charts on the box office is Bruce Willis once again. A Good Day to Die Hard. He just doesn't die, does he?
Yeah. You know, we got to figure out how to do this, like, if we could have a time machine and just do the show 3 hours later, then we'd have this weekend's. They usually come out the predictions on the like this weekend's Sunday numbers come out. We can see who's beating Die Hard on this weekend. But Bruce Willis is always going well. I wonder if he'll show up at the Oscars.
Yeah. So what's talking
to be going on today?
This is it. Tonight is the Oscars, and there's been a lot of hoopla this year over the voting and threats or accusations of dirty tricks and all that kind of stuff. But they are changing the name from the 85th Academy Awards to just the Oscars tonight. So that's according to the Wrap. So that's a bit of a change there. Are you? What were they doing with online video tonight? Anything happening? Any independent folks doing stuff?
Well, Seth MacFarlane's hosting the Oscars this year, so he has quite a fan base on the internet. So it'll be interesting to see. My guess is that in our world it kind of feels over, but I wonder if Harlem Shake will show up on the Oscars somehow, some way. At least in a joke from Seth MacFarlane. It seems a little trendy for me, whereas usually the Oscars are highbrow, but Seth MacFarlane is the host. Right. So highbrow is kind of out the door.
Yeah, they're going to get what they pay for here.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see what happens with Seth. I mean, he's no Ricky Gervais, but he's no Ricky Gervais.
And I guess the red carpet is kind of open to all press, right? Is that something that you have to get exclusive access to?
Not really. I mean, the independent folks have a hard time getting on the red carpet, although folks like our friend Steve Garfield at stevegarfield.com have made it to the Oscars and been out on the red carpet and in the bleachers courtesy of Kodak, I think, at that time before it was the Dolby Theater, it was the Kodak Theater.
Right. Ain't the Kodak Theater anymore, though, is it?
Yeah, so it can happen, but you've got to be a pretty established independent content creator to get invited and really focused on video or the Oscars somehow, some way. You know, even the people who are nominated for an Oscar are having trouble getting to the Oscars. I don't know if you got the story about the Five Broken Cameras director who got stopped at LAX, but apparently Michael Moore had to come to his rescue.
Yeah, it was in the Wrap this week. I guess a Palestinian filmmaker got held for a little bit of interrogation when he came in. And, you know, I've been on international flights, and I was on a couple international flights coming into LAX, and I don't know if it's necessarily just Palestinians that get handled by our customs folks.
No, I was on Canadians do as well.
Yeah, everybody gets.
They're stealing all our jobs.
That's right,
according to the TSA.
But they do tend to be, you know, pretty aggressive in interrogating people on the way into the country. And I was on a flight from a flight from Korea, and they were pulling people off my flight off the jetway left and right, questioning them as well. So I don't know if this is necessarily just because he's Palestinian. I think there's probably a procedure that's followed, but sure, you've got to, you know, sometimes it's not so easy to get here.
Hey, it's good to have Michael Moore as your friend to get you through TSA.
That's very true. Did I ever tell you the time I met Michael Moore?
No, how'd you meet him?
I was in Boston for the Democratic Convention in 2004, and what I was doing, because, you know, these things can get a little boring, is I was just roaming around on the floor. And I happened to see Michael Moore. He had like this entourage of bodyguards around him, which was bizarre given the security that was there to begin with.
Yeah, if he was at the Republican convention, that would make sense.
Yeah, he might need it there versus the Democratic convention. But it was funny because he was, you know, he's a big man. He was kind of just, you know, you'd see him moving through the crowd, kind of like his head bopping up and down. And then I happened to be standing, believe it or not, next to Ken Burns, who is the legendary documentary filmmaker, and I was just telling him how much I appreciated his speech at my sister's college graduation from Skidmore, and what do you know, Michael Moore walks up to him, and they start talking about the business, which was fascinating. and Ken Burns says to him, I want to thank you because you have made, like, you know, he really thought at the time that, and it probably was true, that Michael Moore really helped market documentary content. Because
it was
before then, you really couldn't get a documentary into a theater, right? Or you could, but it was a very limited thing. And he really saw this as a huge boon to the documentary filmmaker. And it was neat to kind of be like the fly on the wall, or, you know, in this conversation, which was kind of cool.
Michael says he's not a capitalist, but his capitalistic endeavors have made it a little bit easier for a lot of documentary filmmakers. Now, what's interesting is that Ken Burns has the Ken Burns effect in iMovie and in different applications. It's where you do a slow zoom in on a photo. Why is there not a Michael Moore effect? What would that effect
be? You know, what it might be is jump cuts of pre-existing recordings from Fox News, maybe.
or you hit the Michael Moore effect, and all of a sudden people start hating your video.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Michael Moore effect is getting trolls to comment on you. That's the
there you go.
That's the impact there. So I'll tell you what, there's certainly no documentary film content topping YouTube this week, because it is mostly Harlem Shake. And I'll tell you what, there's some really good ones out there, but it's getting a little old here. So let's see if we can come up with something new.
Well,
but,
yes. I mean, even SeaWorld did one as a marketing tool this week. And I was a little disappointed when I heard SeaWorld Harlem Shake. I thought, oh man, I'm gonna see dolphins, you know, jumping in the air. I'm gonna see Shamu flipping over.
Yeah, it's a bunch of guys like cleaning the floor, right?
Yeah, they're cleaning the floor, and then
there's some seals,
like the walrus and seals show up, and they're still like in this. It's I was underwhelmed.
Yeah, they could have done better with that.
Then the one that's fun though is Harlem Reacts to Harlem Shakes, and they went a man on the street interviews in Harlem, and they show people Harlem Shake videos, and all the people in Harlem are like, that's not the Harlem Shake. Who do these people think they are? Oh man, they're making fun of Harlem. And it was really interesting. I would say check this one out. It's fun to see. I wonder how many people have made a Harlem Shake video that don't even know what Harlem is, let alone where it is.
Right. I'm sure that's probably the case.
Yeah.
You know what's great about this video too, by the way, is that first of all, it's got 6.4 million views, and this is a great way to attach to a meme and doing something actually creative about it. I mean, certainly there's been a lot of creative Harlem Shake videos, don't get me wrong, but this is a great, you know, kind of a way to report on what the meme is. And you know, they went to Harlem, they went and talked to people, and there's some great reaction to this thing. And it's been neat to see how the Harlem Shake has changed as this thing has developed. Right, it started as something totally different.
Yeah. Yeah, so check out Schlepp Films' Harlem Reacts to Harlem Shake video. It's pretty cool. Number three, I was a little disappointed in this because my expectations were so high with Mr. Jimmy Kimmel, his Christmas present videos where you give your kid a crappy Christmas present.
Yeah, terrorize your child on national television.
You get them to react to the bad present, which had been great. So he decides to do the same thing. I gave my wife or girlfriend a terrible gift for Valentine's Day, which has had over 6 million views. It's funny. But it's not as funny as the kid stuff. It's mostly like snakes and mice, and I was a little underwhelmed.
Yeah, there's one here where there's a Tiffany box and a lizard inside of it. But you know what, too? I think adults are harder to trick in this way than kids are, right? I think that's probably what makes this a little less funny. And I'll tell you what, if I did this to my wife, she would kill me.
Well, she's got a black belt, right?
Yes, so, she does.
Yeah.
And
there you go.
And despite her pregnancy, she is still she's now training with sticks and weapons.
Wow.
So she's not getting hit by anything, but she is hitting others. And I'm thinking, you know what? I'm not going to do that to her. So PlayStation 4 came in at number 2 on the YouTube charts this week with 8.7 million views. And they didn't actually show the PlayStation 4.
They showed it right at the top. And it basically, to me, it looked like a controller and a Kinect. Like I didn't see a box.
Yeah, so there's no box yet.
So is it all built into the Kinect type device?
No, they haven't released what the console is actually going to look like yet. So I think they're probably behind in their industrial design. They got panned last time because the PlayStation 3, when it came out, was so huge. And in some ways, actually, this helps that the last version.
What if it's all built into the Kinect thing and there's no DVD?
Well, if that's the case, then it's going to be really cool.
Physical media is gone,
and they will
it's just
do
built into this bar.
That would be something, especially given the hardware that this thing's pushing. But given what it's doing and what they're saying is inside of it, that thing would probably melt in that size. But you know, one of the big problems for video game consoles in Japan has been the size, and that's what's been hurting Xbox for so long over in Japan. But now it's kind of equalized because the PlayStation was also big. So we'll have to see what this thing actually looks like. But
what if they get it down to the size of glasses.
Glasses, you say? Well, that is because Google has managed to do something like that. It doesn't play, I don't know, Quake or Call
yet.
Of Duty or whatever, but
yet.
Actually, if it did, I'd be very concerned. But this is the Google Glasses. Google released a video detailing how they'll work. So the first video that came out a year ago was really kind of the dream of what it would look like, having this display kind of embed itself in your head. Thankfully, this doesn't do that, but it does put up an image in the upper right-hand corner of your field of vision, and it records video, which for our viewers is probably the most interesting part. You can just say to it, okay, Glass, record a video, and it apparently will. And it does it from your point of view, so it's like got a little cyclops eye like right in the middle of the unit, so it basically takes a video from your forehead. And there were some really cool shots on this video. I don't know if you saw it, Tim, with the horseback rider and the
it's
airplane.
It's really cool. Yeah, what's interesting, there's a lot of spectacle there, but they're taking you places that before you've only imagined what it looked like from somebody's eye view. And now you can really see what it looks like through their eyes. And that's kind of fun.
And it's neat, too, that you can do a hangout. And I'm not sure if you can do the hangout and record at the same time, but you can bring people in. So one of the examples they showed was this flying club and having a first-person perspective from a guy flying and chatting via the internet with his buddies or his flying group there. The thing that got me that I felt was probably the most useful part of it was this one little montage of running through the airport trying to find your next gate.
Yeah, I felt like you were on that show, the CBS show.
The Amazing Race or whatever.
Yeah,
right?
Amazing Race. Yeah,
and
it
you
felt
know what,
like
but,
that.
How many times have you been in that thing where like, oh, no, where's the gate? I got to find the gate because I got 20. And you know what? I'm like, wow, that's the use case that I think would make the most sense for me. The problem I see with this thing is I remember when I got my flip phone. Remember those things?
Yeah.
I got my flip phone in 1995. All right. And because my parents were paranoid that I was going to, you know, get something happen was going to happen to me at college. So they get me this flip phone. It was 75 cents a minute. The thing was huge. I felt pretentious taking it out and talking on it.
Sure.
In public.
Because
nobody else was. And I wasn't that important that, you know, I wasn't like some Hollywood guy. So I think we're going to have the same problem with these things until there's like a bunch of people using them.
Well, the other thing is, or they're disguised. I know that Google is in talks with Warby Parker, who made these glasses, at warbyparker.com to make some Google glasses. So they'll be
really?
A little more stylish. So it'll be interesting to see when those come out. There's all kinds of stuff that goes on. Different deals happen here and there, and some of them you hear about, like deals with YouTubers and music publishing groups that happen.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that I think the record industry is slowly discovering is that if you don't sue YouTube and the people who put their songs on YouTube and do it because they like the songs, perhaps you might actually make some money. So let's think about it. Harlem Shake just recently. No one knew about
number
that
one.
Song. Now it's number one, and everybody is listening to it because there's 1.5 million Harlem Shake videos. What else happened recently? Call Me Maybe. A half a dozen other things where people are lip-syncing or dancing to these songs. And initially, the record industry responded by suing everybody. Now, there's an independent YouTube network called Fullscreen who's gotten permission from the Universal Music Publishing Group to use their entire library and their YouTubers can use those videos without any fear of retribution, and in fact, they're going to be able to share revenue with the label. But Tim, is this just for that group? Is Universal going to allow others to do it?
Right now, it's just that group, and I think that's because the CEO of Fullscreen is a music person himself.
He
used to work at YouTube, but he, while he was working at YouTube, licensed different music pieces that he did on the side. So he's kind of like a DJ music guy on the side, but was a YouTube executive that ran the partners program at YouTube. And so putting this deal together is pretty significant and very helpful. And in fact, this week, Billboard magazine announced that they're now taking into account YouTube's count of a song into figuring out what the top of the charts are. So this week on Billboard, Harlem Shake is number one
because of that. Wow.
This is
a big change because this is
big change.
Probably the biggest change ever for music, right? At least
absolutely.
That's incredible. I didn't even realize they did that. So
yeah, just announced yesterday.
And I just wish they would get there. And excuse my language here, but I wish they would just get their heads out of their asses. And this is what Steve Jobs said to them, right to their face.
Yeah.
You know, by restricting all of this stuff, they have really beaten down a lot of the stuff that they would make money off of. It's not like you're gonna, you know, how many people would realistically want a song so bad that they're going to go figure out a way to extract it from a YouTube video? Especially when now you've got things like Spotify and everything else where the license can live successfully. So it's just killing me. And if anything, they could actually reduce their marketing budgets by sharing revenue with some of these people doing creative stuff with their music. So,
well, it's a bunch of bean counters, which kind of leads us to the app of the week, which I think you're going to talk about.
Okay,
for counting beans.
That's right. So we've told you in our show run up today that we are going to be talking again about the business side of this, as we often do. But you know, there's a couple things that you have to keep in mind if you have an intention of making money with YouTube and or with independent content in general. If you make money, there's something that happens called taxes that you need to pay. And you also need to make sure that your books are kept very well. So we're going to talk about two things today. I'm going to talk about how to manage your money, and Tim's going to talk about how to make money. So Tim's thing might be a little bit more fun than my thing would be. But if you are starting out and you intend to make a business out of your content creation business, you need to be able to keep track of your checkbook. You need to keep track of who you're billing for your clients, and you need to also keep track of who owes you money and for how long they owe it to you for. And one of the best ways to do that, unfortunately, is not the most intuitive, but so there's a bit of a learning curve, but my app of the week is QuickBooks, and it is something that's been around forever. And it's what most business people use, small business people use, to manage their business. And it's not fun. It isn't fun to learn, and sometimes it isn't so fun to use, but it is a way that you can interact with your accountant. So if you do happen to find success, you're not ending up like, I guess, like Wesley Snipes and thrown in jail for tax evasion. So you really need to be mindful of that. And it's best to start keeping good books before you become successful, because you need to get in the habit of doing that. And that's what QuickBooks can help you with. You can invoice people, you can manage your checkbook balance and all that boring stuff involved with doing the back end. And I would definitely suggest taking a look at that. And if our viewers have an interest in more on QuickBooks, I can certainly give you a refresh or a little course on how I'm using it in my independent content businesses. But Tim, I think, has some more interesting stuff. Now, one of the other things that happens in business is that you need to sell. And when you sell to people, you need to keep track of who your prospects might be, who you contacted, who's gotten back to you, who hasn't. And there's a whole process and industry around this called CRM. I believe it stands for Customer Relationship Manager. And there's a bunch of stuff out there for people to use. So Tim, what do you use, and what do you suggest others might use when they're first building their business for CRM purposes?
Sure. Before I get into that, let me just say something else about QuickBooks. One of the cool things that you can do with QuickBooks is hook it up actually to your bank account so that it will download all your transactions that happen at the bank right into QuickBooks. So it makes it easier to track everything. Costs a little bit of money to do that, about $9 a month from your bank, but well worth it if time is of the essence.
Especially if a bounced check will cost you even more. So
exactly. Yeah. Working with CRM, with customer relationship management tools, the number one CRM out there is Salesforce, salesforce.com. They'll have free trials or $9 a month. There's different fees for it, but it can get quite expensive to use it. But by far, it is the best tool out there. It may be overkill for what you're doing. A great place to start doing this that will cost you nothing is Google Docs. So your Google Drive, just open up a spreadsheet. And basically what you want to track, you can actually, if you Google CRM for Google Docs, you'll find some templates that people have already created to get you started. But there are other more powerful tools out there. If you're a Mac person and really like a polished application that feels like a Mac. There's a site called PipelineDeals.com. I think it's about $15 a month, maybe $9 a month. I can't remember. There's also another one called Zoho Notes. But what these allow you to do is track all your contacts, and you're like, oh, big deal. I don't need to track my contacts. I just keep them in my contact book. Yep, absolutely. But what you can do is you can associate those contacts with an opportunity. Let's say that you run into somebody at a party and they might be a potential sponsor for your video series. Well, you want to track that. You want to be able to set alarms with that. And you want to set up a pipeline to your sales. How do you move these people through the pipeline? What's the next step that you need to do? Do you need to call them? Do you need to send them an email? What are they interested in? Tracking all this sounds really simple if you're only talking to five people. It's not a big thing. But as you start doing this year after year, you start meeting hundreds of people. You start meeting thousands of people. You start meeting tens of thousands of people, and you need a way of sorting through them and seeing who's a potential lead, how do you turn them into an opportunity, and then how do you turn that opportunity into a sale. And that's what these CRMs do. You can check them out on YouTube, watch different videos about CRM, kind of get your head around it, and hopefully it will allow you to get through the sales cycle of making contact, creating interest, creating a preference, ask for the sale, close the sale, and of course, keep the sale closed.
And that is the most important thing, is keeping that customer happy after the sale is complete, because you know if they're not happy, they may not re-up with you, and CRMs can be really helpful for maintaining those relationships also.
Just because you can really use it for dating too. It's the same six steps.
Same six steps. And in many ways, it is like that. It is building a relationship with somebody. So one tool that I use in two of my companies is a little tool called HiRise, and that's from 37 Signals, which is, I guess, the anti-Salesforce. It's run by this guy on Twitter, DHH, forgot his, David something or other, but he's been very outspoken in his opinions on things occasionally. David Heiner, I don't know, he's follow him, DHH, he's interesting. But it's a very simplified CRM process as well, and it's not that expensive. In fact, there's a free version to kind of get started with, much like Salesforce does too. I should try it. Tim, what do you use yourself for all of your CRM?
I use Salesforce. It's pretty expensive, but well worth it. I also connect that to LinkedIn, which is really powerful as well.
And how do you use LinkedIn in that regard? Is it looking at who's connected to who? How do you typically use it?
Yeah. So let's say that you want to meet somebody at a certain company. Well, who do you know that knows them? Can you get introduced? Or do you feel comfortable sending them a message directly? With LinkedIn, you can buy messages that you can go contact somebody. And for me, that's a really valuable tool, because a lot of the stuff that I'm talking to people about, either they want, they need what I have to offer them and they want to talk about it, or they don't. And so if you're really smart in how you write that message to them, that you send to them, and you use the proper subject line when you send that message, you're going to get a high response rate if you're targeting the right people. If you're just targeting somebody at some company going, hey, I'm looking for video sponsorships, right, it's not going to work. But if you know you have the right person who, say, wants to reach people who go to Walt Disney World on a regular basis and are big fans of Walt Disney World, then when I send them an email about something or a LinkedIn contact about something, they would be very interested in meeting that. And, you know, for the stuff that I do with MDialogue, you know, I'm contacting people who want to be able to deliver advertising into their over-the-top streams. So iPhone, iPad, Roku, Xbox, if they already control their ad inventory on the PC or on TV and they want to make it work on these connected devices, they want to talk to me because I can enable that to happen for them. And right, so putting that in a message that is very succinct, very short, it gets me a lot of responses.
And then how do you, now you go to a lot of events where you're at business networking events and conferences.
I'll be going to South by Southwest. If you're there, please let me know. Hit
so
me up.
you can connect in person. Do you have a system that you use to convert that physical meeting with somebody into an action in your CRM? What do you do when you get back from a conference? You get a stack of business cards, right?
I'll go through those cards. And one of the tricks that I do, if I know that I need to follow up with that person and I don't have a pen with me while I'm at a cocktail party, I'll tear the card. I'll just tear it. So if I have any cards that are teared, I know that this is somebody that I need to follow up with right away. Now, there may be other people that I need to follow up with, but not as urgently.
Right. So the real hot prospects are, you do a little tear in the cards so that you know when you get back to your hotel room that you got to go through all those. So.
Well, I wait till I get home.
You get home.
I go to sleep when I get back to my hotel room.
So I guess if you're not exhausted by the time you get back to your room, you weren't working hard enough, right?
There you go.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, that is some great tips from Tim on how to manage your burgeoning online business, and we'll be back again, of course, next week for another edition with some interesting tips and tools for all of you indie creators out there. Just a reminder, you can find us at behindthevideo.com, and you can watch us live at 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8:30 a.m. Pacific every Sunday. And this is an interactive show, so you can call in if you're brave enough. You can also chat with us on that page right there as well, behindthevideo.com/live. We'll do that. Tim, where can people interact?
Oh, sorry, yep. Who's your Oscar prediction, best picture? What's your prediction?
You know, I think despite the controversy, it might very well be Lincoln, although the Silver Linings Playbook is becoming like the dark horse in this race, right? So I think one of those two films. What do you think?
What about Life of Pi?
You know, it could be. It just doesn't have that mainstream buzz, though, that these other films have had. But, you know, in your experience, are you seeing more of that?
I don't know. I'm just wondering, Life of Pi. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
There we go. That's all right. And if people want to find me at One Tim Street on Twitter, is a great place to follow me. And if you're headed to South by Southwest, please let me know. Love to see you in person.
So look Tim up while he's there. I am South by Southwest is too close to the impending arrival of my little one, so I am locked down and not traveling for a bit. But maybe we'll do a live update from there, Tim, when you're down there. So you can find me at Lon Seidman, LonSeidman on Twitter or at Google+ and LonSeidman.com. That'll do it for this edition. We are a wrap.
Stories for this episode were compiled by producer Jason Perrier. Follow him on Twitter at JasonPerrier. Behind the Video is a production of 8th Digital Incorporated and the Independent Media Network, LLC. All rights reserved.